So like I said briefly, Brian and Sarah here from Futures, we also collaborated with a local domestic violence agency in Sacramento, which is WEAVE. So they really helped with the program development and implementation during the research project. And then Dr. Miller and our research team is now housed at Children's Hospital in Pittsburgh. Nothing to disclose. So a brief overview of what we'll really be talking about today is going to be the Coaching Boys and Men program. You'll hear me abbreviated as CBIM. And then we'll talk about, briefly, the summary of the evaluation that we did for the CDC. And more importantly, I really want to take the time today to talk about the challenges. You know, how on earth did we get these coaches to actually do this, right? Because the big public health issue here is not having evidence-based work. It's the fact that we do have it, but how do we continue to get people to use it? So that's really what I want to address about how we really made coaches become our allies and how these coaches can really help us sustain a program outside of a research study. So what do we know? So it's critical that we understand that this is an issue amongst women and girls. So clearly both women and girls are experiencing partner violence, 1 in 4 in women, 1 in 5 in adolescent girls. And more importantly, there is obviously a violent sexual component here where 1 in 10 of our high school girls are experiencing forced sex. And more importantly, disproportionately over 16, between our 16 to 24 age group is experiencing this type of violence. And furthermore, there's a lot more of this violence happening before the age of 25. So they're experiencing their first sexual assault, you know, at a very young age. So we're going to talk a little bit more about the program, and again, this is an emphasis on it being a coaches leadership program. So, you know, why coaches? Why are they part of our solution? And I think a big part of that is these are critical role models. They're adults, but they're not parents. And they also see our youth and our children in a different environment, which is at school, where a lot of parents don't get to really experience what that is. And they really can have this positive influence. I think it's important to understand that they can shape our young men as athletes, and more importantly, that these coaches are already delivering these types of messages. We're talking about teamwork. We're talking about respect. So I think a lot of that folds into the messages that we're talking about for respecting women and girls. And more importantly, you know, boys are listening to these men. So I think it's important to utilize that. That resource already exists. So when we look at the coaches' toolkit, Sarah's actually going to pass that around. And then what I'll talk about briefly during the presentation is the actual card series. And then the card series is really the weekly messages. And again, I'll get into that as we talk about the coaches' implementation. But Sarah will show you those other resources that's within the toolkit. And then more importantly, the CBIM model, you know, we actually interviewed a lot of our coaches, and part of the reason that this is really a great model is because it's really easy. I mean, when I come up to a coach and I say, this is the program, I'm not coming up with a briefcase, I'm not coming up with this huge thing, it's all right here in my hand. So I think it's important that it's, you know, 15 minutes at most during the week. Our coaches are the leaders of this program. Our partnerships, like we talked about, not only with Futures, but a local domestic violence agency, which is WEAVE in Sacramento, is really critical for this program to really work and to have a holistic point of view of what we do for public health. And, of course, there are training sessions for the coaches, and this is done during the sports season. And like we talked about, those tools Sarah will pass around so you guys can take a look at each of those components. And there is a program evaluation that we're currently working on. So I'm going to play you a little video because I think as much as I toot my horn about this program, this is really going to show you why we do the work that we do. Sorry about the sound.
We're not only a teacher, a coach, we're a father, we're a big brother. Being able to have a class like this where we can teach lessons that they can use in their life, I think is tremendous. I have never found a program that is so structured that teaches young men how to interact and deal with people of the opposite sex.
If someone, you know, is like on the phone, you know, like yelling at a girl or something, or like we're in a group and, you know, we're kind of making like sexist jokes or something like that, you know, somebody's like, hey, boys and men, you know, it instills the principles of, you know, the whole program, you know, is boys and men, you know, be respectful, boys and men, you know, don't treat a girl like that.
We talk about, you know, the right way to do things versus the wrong way to do things. And when we're done, we basically all agree. So we might have an athlete that's involved in a bad situation. He sees the agreement of the rest of his teammates and the coaches that very easily could change the way they're thinking.
We take this survey and it asks you questions like how you treat people, if you've ever seen people being treated poorly, and what you did about it. You didn't say anything to them, but seeing that answer there, I think I should have.
We'll say, you know, a marriage is like teamwork. You know, boyfriend, girlfriend, you want to be a team. If you're a team, it empowers both of you.
This program's got to expand to where we keep hitting more kids and keep hitting the same kids again.
Our young men, they're going out there and they're making a difference amongst the rest of the student body. They're changing behaviors because they become the leaders through the Boys to Men program.
Respect starts today, and it starts with me.
I'm starting to see it snowball here on this campus, and it's an amazing thing.
So sorry about the audio, but so as you can see, that was actually one of our district ADs from Sacramento. Those young men actually also participated during our Violence Prevention Awareness Week, and we actually testified at Sacramento for Initiative for Dating Violence Prevention. So those young men actually came, testified to our assembly members, and talked about the program. So really, I think something like this video, which Futures put together, really is a lot more than I can say, and I hope that that gives you a little bit more of a perspective of what this program can really do. So we'll briefly again talk about the summary from the evaluation. Again, this was a CDC-funded evaluation. It was a randomized control trial in Sacramento with 16 schools. 8 were randomized to the actual intervention, which was receiving the program, and then not receiving the program was just a regular sports season. The handouts online will actually give you a one-pager overview, because I only have 2 slides on this because I really, again, wanted to focus on the implementation piece. So the key thing is within a 3-month follow-up, our athletes who were in the CBIM program had significant increases in intentions to intervene, which means these athletes were actually more willing to intervene if they saw disrespectful or harmful behavior happening. And, you know, the bystander intervention is very rooted in the theory of this particular program, and those positive bystander interventions did increase. And more importantly, we'll talk about how abusive behaviors and that recognition of that increased with what's known as full intensity athletes. And what that means is we talked about how not all the coaches did the entire program through the year. All of them may have done a few or not, but the intensity, meaning the ones who did the full program in its entirety, had this extra significant increase. And then when we look at 12 months, they actually saw a decrease in abuse perpetration, which is great, and then the negative bystander behavior also decreased. And then when we looked at the coaches, we also did a pre and post for the coaches, and we saw that their bystander intervention also increased, their confidence increased, and more importantly, the frequency of these discussions, both with their coaches and within their own peers, whether they were coaches or other adults, also increased. So we're going to really talk about, again, the challenges of implementations. Like I alluded to earlier, we have all these great evidence-based programs, but how do we actually, as a public health institute, really implement these programs and have them continue, have them actually benefit the people that we want to serve and not just, you know, write a research paper about it? So when we look at it, one of the key things is really connecting to the school, right? So we talk a lot about partnerships in public health, and one of the things we started with was having a violence prevention advocate be the trainer for these coaches. So it's not someone like me, it's not, you know, the PI, it's not somebody like that. It's somebody who is an expert in violence prevention, who is passionate about it, who really knows the significance of that in that community. So that's why we really partnered up with Weave, who has been doing that work within Sacramento. And then, of course, when we're looking at the school environment, we really need to work with hierarchy. I mean, if you get the superintendent to get that buy-in, that superintendent, you know, the principal's going to listen to that superintendent, and the principal is the boss of the athletic director, and the athletic director is going to listen to that person. But more importantly, it's not just about this top-down environment where the athletic director is really your key person. He's the one who's doing the groundwork. He's the one who's at school. He's the one who knows not just school policy, but knows his coaches and knows his athletes. So you really need to get a good assessment of what is this AD going to be like. So if each and one, every one of you met Ron Barbie, you know that that was one of my star ADs. You know, he was passionate about it, he was interested in it, and I didn't have to do a lot of buy-in for those individual coaches. But not to name names, the ones that aren't as great as my Ron Barneys, you know, it took a lot more legwork. It took a lot more legwork to work with individual coaches and find those star coaches within those programs. So we briefly talked about, so again, we have different types of ADs. And when I say AD, again, I'm referring to athletic director here. And a star AD is someone like Ron Barney, who is a strong advocate, someone who's already that leader. So some of the more challenging coaches who may say, you know, either way, when we walk into a school environment, you're telling them one more thing that they have to do. So you really need to be an advocate. You really need to be like, this is what this program can do, and this is how easily it can be done. So some of the scripts in handling ADs is really, we're developing a document right now that will put all these lessons learned together, but really it's about the approach, it's about the introduction, you know, and knowing your AD is key, because if that AD is not going to be an advocate for you, then you can say, you know what, I'll do the work for you. What can I do? Can I at least have the coach's contacts? Can you send a group email and then I can follow up individually? So there's a lot of extra legwork you're going to have to do if you don't have an AD who's like, I'm going to have a coach's meeting for you. You can do one presentation. You can get everybody done at one time and tell them about the program. But the reality is we had to do a lot of footwork. It was following up with individual coaches and meeting them at practice and seeing when that would work for them. Or just the willingness of like, hey, coach, do you have 5 minutes? I'm actually going around to all the campuses. Can I just connect with you really quickly in between your classes, or can I catch you after practice? So really being able to handle those scripts where you can basically make yourself available and make it easy for them. So of course recruiting coaches alludes to a little bit of what I just talked about, but again, it's always kind of a marketing sales thing. I think all of us are familiar with that. You have to get buy-in. I mean, we're essentially selling a product, and ideally not for a profit, but really just for the betterment of what we can do as a public health group. So, I mean, a pitch to the program that one, Ernest Brown was our trainer for Weave, and he did an amazing job of really having this emotional appeal. You know, it's not just like, well, this is one more thing to do, I don't want to do this. And Ernest would look at them and be like, you are really helping your boys make decisions that's going to affect the rest of their lives. And he would really follow up with a local example, and one of those local examples was Ray Kuth. So Ray Kuth worked for... was a football player for the Carolina Panthers, and he ultimately ended up having a girlfriend. They got into an argument. He ended up killing her. So that whole news story led to a simple argument that led to violence, that led to his imprisonment, and now he has a son who's being taken care of his grandmother. So when we have this emotional appeal, when you make it local, when you make it identifiable and make it real, Ernest really did an awesome job of doing that with our coaches and really understanding to them. I mean, and he was actually a cross-country skier coach, so he really would appeal to them with either his coaching background or his background as a violence prevention advocate. So again, it's really making those individual connections with those coaches. So I did some of that legwork with Ernest where it's like, I'd be like, oh, is your daughter playing volleyball? Or what's going on with this? Or I heard your team won last week. So you really need to connect with them about what's important to them. And of course you'll have those coaches. Some of the key things is, well, you know what? I'm already doing this with my athletes. I don't need to do this. And then one of the things to say is, you know what? That's awesome. I'm glad you're already talking about these things. But more importantly, do you talk to them about how they can help their peers? About how they can help them stop things that aren't doing well. So most of the time they're like, no, we don't talk about that. So yeah, you're nurturing the athletes that you have, but are you teaching them to help their other peers? So that's a really different component in our project. And of course, there's just going to be disinterested coaches. You know, we respect the fact that this is voluntary, so all we can do is ask. So again, as we continue to talk about recruiting, you know, you have to present yourself and be like, you know, to the AD, to the coach, really try to gauge them from the 5 minute conversation you may have with them on the phone, or if you're lucky enough to set up an in-person, again, if you have that really strong relationship with that AD, they can really help you with those connections, or again, you're going to be willing to do that legwork, be willing to see each of those individual coaches and see what works for all of them. And, you know, some of the key talking points in the initial meeting is just really introducing yourself. And one of the things that Ernest, again, emphasizes is just, this is the program. This is it. So if we can say, you know, I don't have time, I can't do this, but when you're just holding this, and that's all, and then we're talking about a training that we do one-on-one with you, that doesn't seem very complicated, right? And we don't want it to be complicated. And then when we talk about logistics and communications with recruiting with coaches, you know, it's very important to have, we ended up developing a one-page contact sheet. And on that contact sheet was, what's your preferred contact, when's the best time to call you, and when are your practice times? You know, the critical things where it's like, you don't have to keep following up and asking their schedule. You know, okay, after 5:30, you can come after practice. Or you know what, actually, I don't work during the day, and I only just go to practice, call me in the morning. So you really need to strategize the best way that you fit into their schedule. And then when we talk about training, so again, this is really where you develop this relationship component, where you have, ideally, the training session is about 60 minutes. So this is a time where you're going to have those statistics. You're going to present your PowerPoint. And again, this is what our violence advocate trainer presented and did these trainings, again, with all their coaches. And again, that makes sense. Instead of me being the presenter, it's somebody who's doing this work who, again, that emotional appeal is there. So one of the key things to keep in mind when Ernest was doing these presentations, he was really mindful of who he was working with. He'd ask them, be like, do you guys prefer a group thing? Do you want to do one-on-one training? So really, what works best for you? Maybe you have a coach who's like completely comfortable and wants to do the group training, and maybe you have a coach who's like, you know, I rather prefer one-on-one. I'm not as comfortable with this issue, right? So, and then the key thing, again, with the relationship development, you need to find those connections. You know, whether it's talking about the Giants game and World Series, or talking about what game they won last week, or talking about, like, oh, how are you looking forward to the next sports season? And again, we talked a little bit about this. The training, again, is within 60 minutes. And, of course, if you don't have that much time, the limited time is really to show the statistics, why this program is significant. And, again, just follow up with the fact that the program is really all in the card series here. And then when we talk about being flexible and adaptable, I think I've really alluded to that since I'm talking about fitting into their schedule, finding the best way to communicate with them, what is going to work best for them. So again, kind of overview of these strategies. The communication piece is every coach is different. So one of the coaches that sticks out in my mind has been coaching for over 30 years. So he was not someone who wanted me to text him. He was someone who wanted me to call him at 8 a.m. every day before he went to school, as opposed to a coach who was a newer coach who's like, text me anytime, let me know when you come by, let me know when you're going to be here. So again, that communication is key, and you need to make sure that that works for that person. And I have to stop, so I'm going to just go very briefly through the rest of these. So again, supporting the coach's delivery, very similar. Really knowing their game schedule is critical. And then similar techniques with communication, relationship development, and being adaptable. And the last key thing is definitely making sure that those people are connected with a domestic violence agency, because incidences will occur, and it's critical that the coach doesn't feel responsible for those issues, that he has support and he has the right resources to be supported. Thank you so much, and I'm sorry I was running too slow.